And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future, here comes Luka. Even losses feel like wins when you're with your good friend Tim. It's 77 Minutes in Heaven.
Welcome to 77 Minutes, a Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network, the only Mavericks podcast that has never been rained out indoors. Which, yes, I am implying that every other Mavericks podcast you listen to has been rained out. It's a weird fact of life.
I mean, the podcast has also never been swept.
That's true. We just simply would not be swept.
We don't own any brooms.
I'm Tim Cato. I ran to talk about the Mavericks. This is Austin Garuya sitting next to me. We're recording a little bit later on Wednesday, just about the Mavericks' Tuesday game for 119-109 win that extends the series. And there's only so much to say. I think my overarching thought is that the Mavericks showed that what they were doing can beat the Warriors. You know, I already thought that from the first three games.
Yeah.
Like, it's Josh Bow made this point on the Mavs Moneyball podcast that it is very unusual or different for a team that has been down in all three series they've played in to basically not change what they're doing. Strategically, they've tweaked things, obviously. But they haven't changed the rotations or the distribution of minutes other than Frank Ntilikina going in for Josh Green. Shout out Frank hitting a three-pointer. I thought he played well. I thought that that's probably something they would have got to sooner had he not had an appendectomy, you know, right before the postseason began. And so they've been a very static team in terms of change, in terms of what they're trying to do. It's just that it worked. And it could have worked in game two. It could have worked in game three. It worked in game four. I don't think it's going to ultimately affect the results of the series. But I think the series could have been more competitive because I think Dallas is a very good team. But look, it always seemed more likely that the Warriors were going to be the team to win the series just by, you know, their talent levels, just by the nature of their championship pedigree, just by the nature of all these things, by the fact that the Mavericks have been running a shortened rotation for, you know, pretty much every other day for weeks now. And so I think it's good. It's good rationalization or it's good proof of concept that the Mavericks won game four. It proves that they deserve to be in the conference finals. It proves that they are one of the four best teams right now in the NBA, that they are very close to being a title contender. It doesn't mean that the team should be complacent. It doesn't mean that this roster doesn't need improvement. It very clearly does. But I do think it's good. There's no downsides to the Mavericks winning this game. And it's not unexpected or fluky or fortunate. They played their style, their brand of basketball, and it got them a win. And it could have got them other wins against the Warriors, no matter what happens the rest of the series. And that is the defining piece of this team, the defining ethos and identity of this team that they're going to take forward into the offseason, into future seasons. And that is a real massive reason for optimism when you look at what they've done this year and especially, you know, just where they started this season.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, this series should be 2-2. They should have won game two. They built a
butterfly effect. We don't know what would have happened. Obviously, some of what happened in game four may have been affected by the Warriors not being as locked in as they should have been. But I agree.
Yeah, this could easily be 2-2. And I think besides them just hitting all of their threes in the game, which is usually a bellwether for them to win, they tightened up their defense in a way that they had not done the first three games, and they prevented a lot of points in the paint. I think there was a layup line for the first three games, and it was easy for guys to get inside and get shots. And I think that's one of the things that to look for in game five and possibly game six is their paint defense. They were able to ward off drives, and Steph wasn't able to cause as much havoc. And some of their split cut actions, they didn't have any miscommunications and didn't give as many open layups and open shots at the rim as it had previously done. Because that's where they lost game two, is because they hit 21 threes. It's pretty hard to lose a basketball game when you hit 21 threes, but they couldn't get to the rim, and they couldn't stop any points at the rim. And I think they made a really great adjustment, both defensively and offensively. On the offensive side, it was great to see Luka play off the ball a lot. That's, I think, the most he's played off the ball in any playoff game this season. He got actually he got like two or three wide open looks from three on catch and shoot, which he never does. And actually, quite honestly, they should have won by like 40, because Luka had a bad shooting game. He missed a lot of shots he normally makes. He didn't get a lot of calls he probably should have gotten.
Golden State was giving him those threes, which, yeah, I think is smart. Just based off his track record of hitting catch and shoot threes, the fact that he's hesitant to take them sometimes, which not because he can't make them, but because he just doesn't want to take them. That was clearly something Golden State had done a little bit from the start of the series, and you saw it show up. You know, he was, what, 1 of 3 on catch and shoot, like wide open catch and shoots?
Yeah, wide open. And he even moved off the ball. He had a give and go, which is not something he's done since his rookie season.
With Frank Ntilikina.
He used to do that in his rookie season a lot, and he just stopped doing it the last couple of years. And that's in his game, and I think that's another really good wrinkle that they added. And Jalen just being on the ball and being more aggressive really helped give their offense a little bit of juice. And, you know, Kidd said it after the game. The Warriors can't guard them one-on-one. They can't play man defense against them successfully for long stretches of time. They have to go to that zone, especially when they're hitting threes, because they don't really have answers in guarding all three of Jalen, Luka, and Spencer and not giving up open threes.
I think your point about the defense is the one that I want to touch a little bit more on. Golden State had to go back to mid-range shots, and they scored 18 points there, which allowed them to, you know, keep this game to just a 10-point margin in the end. And they're a good mid-range shooting team. They don't even have, you know, the player that the Warriors players say is the best mid-range shooter on the team, which is Otto Porter. But I think that shows that, you know, they had to adjust and they had to go find points somewhere else. And that is exactly what the Dallas defense has been trying to do for months now. You double-team the stars, which, you know, kind of funny that, you know, Jason Kidd said that they can't guard him. I mean, they're not guarding Steph Curry one-on-one. But you double-team the stars, you get the ball out of their hands, you frustrate them. Stars are going to score against any level of defense, but you frustrate them, you try to prevent them from getting to their spots. And then you run the role players off the three-point line. And what the Warriors were doing, as you alluded to, in games 2 and 3 especially, those role players were getting all the way to the rim. And the Mavericks did a better job preventing both of those things from the role players, that they shored up inside, didn't prevent the layup line, as you suggested. Obviously, more made shots is a good thing for this team. They can get back, get set. And I thought it was just a good, you know, game four in so many ways up until the fourth quarter, which I don't even know what there is to say about that. Tell me about what you thought of that here in a second. But up until the fourth quarter, it was a representation of everything the Mavericks had done successfully this season, every part of the strategy that got them to the conference finals. I don't think, you know, I think that's a good thing. I think it's good to show that one more time, you know, even if the series were to end in game five on Thursday.
Yeah, that fourth quarter, that was rough. But I think it was kind of a byproduct of the Warriors have better talent 6 through 10. On their roster than the Mavericks do, and it's a pretty wide margin. Even though Jonathan Kuminga is a rookie, he has a lot of basketball talent, and he can score, he can go and get baskets. And also, they played Bielitsa at the five, and Bielitsa is great. If he's not playing against starting 11 competition on the other side, he can make plays. It really opens up their offense, and I think there was just a letdown. You know, it seemed like the game was over. They hit a bazillion threes in the third quarter. They also kind of got a little unlucky that they missed all of their threes in the beginning of the fourth quarter to kind of just stem the tide. And that's what caused that huge run. I thought Kidd actually managed it pretty well. He brought in the starters. He called appropriate timeouts. And it got below 10, but then it once got back above 10, it didn't get back below 10 for the rest of the game.
Well, here's the flip side. The Mavericks did miss a bunch of threes to stem the tide, like you said. If the Mavericks' 20 of 43 three-point shooting in game four was equally distributed across the entire game, would we have just seen a 10-point game that played out normally with starters playing normal minutes? Was the nature of the Mavericks hitting all their shots early and, you know, shooting well early in the game doesn't actually mean that you have to shoot poorly later in the game. But often that is how it works out, is that, you know, even in the 48-minute sample size that the law of averages and variation and randomness will affect you later on, and you're just going to miss some of those shots. If it had been more equally distributed, maybe we'd be looking at this game and saying, okay, Dallas won, it deserved to win, but it was a 10-point game. It wasn't a 30-point blowout. They're not 30 points blowout better than Golden State, because Golden State's very good, and that's why they're ultimately going to win this series. I think you could make that argument. Although you could also make the argument that every game in the postseason is dictated by law, in fact, to be a blowout. A strange law that Congress passed. It feels like they should be focusing on other things.
Possibly.
But since they did that, you know, it was inevitable.
And Golden State does that. Okay, I mean, they lost by 55 to the Grizzlies, so it's, you know.
That's true.
I thought they just had a bad game. I also thought Kerr coached a pretty arrogant game, that the game was close until that stretch in the second quarter where Kerr decided to play Kuminga and Moody all together without Steph or Draymond for a very long period of time. And I thought it was very strange. He coached the first half like it was like a normal game in March. And he did not play playoff minutes to his stars or playoff rotation. And I thought it was very strange. And that's when the game broke open, is when Spencer and Jalen got going. When Lucas sat, that's when the game really blew wide open. And the Warriors played a bad lineup. That was not a lineup I would expect to see in the conference finals. And I thought Kerr got a little cute being up 3-0 and trying to get his guys some minutes and some experience in the playoffs instead of just going for the kill shot. And I think it came back to haunt them. If they lose game five, that will come back to really bite them.
Say what you will, it is something Jason Kidd would do too, though, right?
I don't think he would do it in the playoffs. I don't think at this point, I think in the regular season, absolutely something he would do. But in the he's not played bad lineups in the playoffs. Except for that, outside of actually the fourth quarter of this game where it was actually supposed to be over and the other team pulled their starters, he hasn't gotten really cute with his rotation at all at any point in the playoffs. I honestly can't remember too many bad rotation decisions that he's made. And he doesn't really have the option to get cute. There aren't like guys, I mean, outside of just playing Josh Green some minutes, there aren't really other guys I need to get Marquise Chris minutes. I need to get Trey Burke minutes. Those guys don't see the floor unless it's a 30-point blowout with a minute or two left to go.
Yeah, you might be right about that. You've talked me into it. You know, I don't have an issue with what Kerr did. You know, I think it makes sense within the identity of the Warriors and the idea that they didn't use their picks when they were bad for two seasons to trade for win now players. You know, their identity is still that they're trying to build to the next dynasty, the next iteration of this, of, you know, a rotational core around their aging centerpieces. But I guess the reason I say it is the way that when Jason Kidd has done things that don't make perfect sense to me, that I don't think are maximizing the team's chances to win in the moment, like, you know, double teaming Kevin Durant for an entire game. It's obvious that those double teams ultimately, you know, have been very effective, and that getting a 48-minute run out at practicing something like that, doing something to an extreme, has helped this team. It's hard to argue with Kidd's approach in most instances. Although I do think that at some point it will backfire. Not this series, not this season, but going forward, and we'll have to, you know, talk about that at that point. But
I think in the regular season it's a time to experiment and try to find things that are gonna work for the playoffs. I just think if you have the chance to end a playoff series and get rest where you've been playing every other day for 3 weeks, you should take advantage of that, and you should try to maximize that opportunity. I don't think this is the stage where you need to be experimenting with your lineups and experimenting with young players. If I was a Warriors fan, I'd be pretty upset with that lineup.
It was the Warriors starters who were that game turned from a 10-point lead to a 30-point lead, though.
That's true.
You know, like that's also
it went from 15 to 30 with the starters, and that is very true.
Right. So, and like we said before, you know, Otto Porter Jr. is definitely a absence for them that they have to account for. So if you're thinking big picture, anyway, we don't need to dwell on this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Is there anything else that we could?
You know, this series is so... I guess at this point, the Mavericks played so many playoff games, we just kind of know what they do.
Right.
They don't really have a lot of other tricks or anything up there. Like, they just have to play good basketball. And I think they're getting better at guarding the Warriors' split cut actions and off-ball actions, and they're finding more solutions on the defensive end. So it'll be interesting to see if they can pull out Game 5. Because if you pull out Game 5, that makes the Warriors a little nervous because they have to go win on the road to clinch. And the Mavericks have been really good at home. And you don't want to... And as the Phoenix Suns learn, you don't want to play Luka Doncic in Game 7.
Right.
Even if you're at home.
Yeah. Just going through my notes, I thought Dallas doubled Steph a bit more aggressively. It wasn't always just when he called up Luka's defender. They will double him... you know, with multiple defenders, they would sometimes just send them quicker. And it's why you saw a lot of, like, splitting of the double teams throughout this game. Yeah. Honestly, on both sides, it was a big game. It's a big night for splitting the double team fans. I thought Kevon Looney's impact was not nearly as present, that the Mavericks stretched him out. There was multiple times where he was the guy late, getting, you know, helping too far off his the three-point shooter that he's guarding in the corner. And I thought that was smart. You know, that's one reason why it was a mistake for Luka to continually call up Kevon Looney. Yeah. Because Kevon Looney is a good switch defender.
He is. He's very solid.
He's good at moving his feet in short bursts and laterally like that. He's not a player who's going to sprint out at a three-point shooter when he's cheating in you know, 2-9-ing into the lane. He doesn't have that type of, like, you know, 15-foot quick recovery. You know, he has shorter recovery that serves him well against a player like Luka. And so I thought that was a smart adjustment. You know, I don't think that even if the Warriors, you know, the rest of the series, however many games it is, I don't think the Warriors are going to get the success from Kevon Looney that they did. And it was game two, right? That he had the 21 points.
And I think also Maxey's rebounding was much better. He had 8 rebounds in this game. I think he had like 3 in the first like 2 or 3 games combined.
Yeah.
And I think they did a better job. That was another reason why they were losing. They lost game two, is like they couldn't keep Looney off the boards and they were giving him so many second chance opportunities. They lost second chance points, I think like 18-4. And you just can't win basketball games if you're losing the possession game that way.
Yeah, him hitting shots. Others have said this, but if he hits his first shot, he's an entirely different player.
Yeah.
I think that's true. He took his first 2-point attempts of the series.
But he made it.
He was 2 of 3 inside the arc. And he hadn't taken a two... Yeah, he had not attempted a 2-pointer this entire series. So just getting him fully offensively involved changes how this team is. Like, I've said this, but the Mavericks would not be in the conference finals if Maxey had not played like he had the past two series.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I have one final thing.
Okay.
Did you know the rule, if you wedgie a free throw.
It's not a wedgie.
A ledgie. It just sits there on the top of the ledge and just... I didn't know the rule. I thought he would have to reshoot it.
So it's a jump ball if it's in live action. Yes. And I've seen that happen a few times.
I've seen that happen, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen it on a free throw. Someone linked John Wall doing it. So it has happened before. I had never seen it
at any level of basketball. It was truly one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Draymond somehow puts like topspin on the ball.
He has a weird jumper form spin.
Well, he needs a backpack on him at all times.
It was truly funny to see how funny it was to Draymond and Luka. Draymond and Luka also absolutely adore one another. It is hilarious how much those two dudes like each other. Draymond is constantly picking up Luka off the ground.
I saw that.
It's happened like two or three times now. It's so funny how opposite this series is from the Suns series, where there's just absolute mutual respect across the board between these two teams, and I felt like that did not exist between the Mavericks and the Suns.
I mean, Luka also kind of looks like he's shooting with a backpack on sometimes.
He does.
He's got a funny jump. Like it's there's nothing wrong with it. It's just like it's
no one else has his job. It's one of one.
Yeah. It's very I'm gonna have to think about the terminology. It's
almost like he's throwing the ball into the rim and not shooting it.
Right. Or it's kinda like he is shooting it, but he's like pointing it.
It's like a beer pong shot before a jumper.
It's very beer pong. I like that. And it feels like what happens with the rest of his body, like it's all arms sometimes. Like he uses a lot of lower body, but the parts of the lower body he uses for his jumper can like change.
Yeah.
I guess.
He doesn't have consistent mechanic. He's a very strange jumper.
I'm gonna have to think on this. There's something here that I can identify. I just need more time. So on that note, we're gonna get out of here. Already running a little late getting this podcast recorded. So let's get this out here. If the Mavericks, when the Mavericks season ends, we'll be back with the entire gang and we'll do, you know, a proper postmortem. But hey, it might not end on Thursday. Hey, we don't know.
Do you know if the Warriors have ever blown a 3-1 lead? I don't really have it on hand, but if you could like look that up, maybe we could find out if that's ever happened.
I don't think they keep statistics.
They don't
like
keep
that.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's probably lost to history.
Yeah, it'd probably be pretty notable if they had done that before.
Right. It would be, but it's really unfortunate that there's no way for us to know that. So on that note, thanks for listening. We'll see ya.
He plays Fortnite just like me. I am 34. Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka, Big Dick Doncic, from the home of Melania Trump. How many kids you have? Don't fight the future, it tears me apart. Don't fight the future, please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
Oh my God! Shut it down! Oh no! Let's go home! It's a wrap, dude.
Man, that is a wrap.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.